From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're going to have an interesting conversation later about just how individual people, including you yourself, of course, can get involved in environmental concerns and in creating a more sustainable place in our community. That's coming up later on Newsmakers. Right now, we're focusing our report on a report that's recently come out. It's the 2021 version of the Compass Now report, and it's subtitled "Navigating Toward Stronger Communities," and it's all about wellness and but not just like healthcare, all the different things that add up to wellness in our community. And I'm joined by several guests who are involved in compiling that report and now disseminating the information. First of all, Liz Evans is with the Great Rivers United Way. Liz, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Kaylee Day is with the Monroe County Health Department and is the Compass Now Committee Chair. Kaylee, thank you for being with us on Newsmakers.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Sarah Havens is with Gunderson Health System's Office of Population Health. Sarah, thanks a lot for being on Newsmakers.
Hey, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to join you and these fantastic women.
So let me start with Kaylee. Kaylee, you are the committee chair, and this was your project for a long time. Tell me in really, really broad strokes, what is the Compass Now report all about?
Yeah, so the Compass Now report is really about kind of getting a gauge on where our region as well as our counties are at in regards to various health and socioeconomic issues. So this, and it's really important for local health departments as well as hospitals, because by state statute, local health departments have to produce a community health assessment and community health improvement plan every 5 years, and hospitals have to do a community health needs assessment every 3 years. So this is a really great partnership between, La Crosse County, Monroe County, Trumbull County, Buffalo County, Vernon County, Houston County, and Minnesota. And who am I missing?
I think you got all of them.
I got all of them. I know I always miss one. So it's a really great opportunity for all of us to pull our resources together and to gather data, do random household surveys, collect secondary data that kind of give us an idea of where the community's at in regards to these issues.
That must make it a much stronger report. If everybody's got to do these different versions of these reports anyway, Sarah, it must be good to know that instead of everybody doing the same thing, you can kind of pool resources and make the end product so much the better.
It certainly is. And as Kaylee mentioned, the six counties that are involved with Compass, it's those county health departments and the hospitals within those counties that have partnered to do this. So we're able to take our resources that we all have and put them into one really strong process to capture what the needs of our communities are. And that certainly is done by county, so we can really hone in on a particular area, but as a region too. So if we want to do more of a regional perspective, we've analyzed that data so that it can be somewhat packaged as well. And as Kaylee said, hospitals have to do this needs assessment every 3 years. And that's according to the Affordable Care Act. And one of the recommendations, and actually we get checked whether or not we're doing this, is are we partnering with our local public health department? And, certainly because we have the strength and collaboration amongst these many organizations, we are strong to mark absolutely yes on that.
Liz, from the United Way, when I look at the different sort of chapters or sections of content in this report, you've got length and quality of life, you've got health behaviors and concerns, you've got healthcare itself, you've got socioeconomic factors, you've got physical environment and safety. How is it determined how those sections are going to break out and which areas you're going to look really hard at like that?
So the sections in our report actually follow the county health rankings model that really it focuses on how the social determinants of health, along with health behaviors and health care, filter up into a longer quality life. At United Way, you know, we are heavily focused on those social determinants of health, you know, the education, economics, as well as, you know, mental health and physical well-being. And it all just really flows very nicely in following that model. That's how our data is all organized as well.
Compass Now has been publishing reports every few years since 1995. Has it always looked at these same categories of concern?
No. The Compass report started as a pilot program that United Way Worldwide brought together just to see, because all of these entities had to do an assessment, and United Way's are in tune with the communities that they serve as well. So we started looking at this model, and United Way's typically focus in on pillars of education, health, economic stability, and then community basics. So previous iterations of Compass were organized under those pillars, and we determined that it made more sense to follow the county health rankings model for the past couple reports.
So Kaylee, when you're looking at this year's report, Kaylee Day from the Monroe County Health Department and the Compass Now committee chair, is there a particular area of concern that you're especially keen to let the public know about?
You know, we use this data to inform our community health improvement plan. And for the past couple of years, mental health has been one of our top issues in Monroe County and top concerns. So I think that is one area, while it's not new that it has been one of our needs, it is something that I think also too, due to just the stresses of the COVID-19 pandemic, that's something that I really want community members to continually be aware of. I think the time I've been here, you know, we're talking about it more and more, but that's not necessarily, we're still, you know, having issues of access and things like that. So I think it's great that the conversations are happening, but it's still one of those needs that I really want people to be aware of. One other thing that I was actually pleased to see that came up in our needs was safe and affordable housing. We've had a lot of really strong housing advocates in Monroe County the whole time that I've been with the health department, 6 years, and I've had a lot of really committed individuals working on that issue, but it hasn't ever come up in our top needs. And I think there's such a link between housing and just all areas of your health. So to see that bubble up to one of the top needs, I think is really important too, because there is a housing issue, you know, in our county as well as many counties.
Sarah Havens from Gunderson, the housing issue that Kaylee just raised is interesting because a lot of people would think about that as sort of an economic thing and not necessarily having to do with individual wellness. But working in public health, you must see a lot of these things that we normally wouldn't think of as healthcare issues or wellness issues that really have a lot to do with health and wellness, such as housing and income and all these things.
Absolutely. Those things that you are describing are called social determinants of health, and they are those kind of social issues that impact your health. When you think of health, you're only receiving about 20% or less of your health care from a structured healthcare organization. The rest of your health comes from what happens outside of the walls of any provider's office. And it's housing, it's food, it's clothing, it's having transportation to get to where you need to be, it's financial security, it's a safe environment to live. And if, for instance, if you don't have a safe quality home to live in, that affects your sleep, it affects your safety, your mental health, not only your physical health. And if you don't have a safe home to go to, you might even have medications that need to be refrigerated, or you need to have, you need to keep your food fresh in a refrigerator. And if you are housing insecure, those things that we may take for granted every day are not some of the things that you have in your life. And as we think of our health and wellness, it's those very daily needs that many of us take for granted that aren't sufficient in our lives.
Without referencing us to a specific, you know, individual or patient or whatever like that, take us through the thought process of how something like someone's income could have could be a determining factor in their overall sense of wellness.
If you have income, that means that you can pay rent, or you have a home that you're paying a mortgage on. So you have a roof over your shoulders or a roof over your head. And that means you have electricity and heat to keep you warm. You probably have water that you can drink. Everybody does, you know, you need to drink water, healthy water. You need to have refrigeration for the most part to have healthy foods and sometimes medications. You need to have some mode of transportation to get to where you need to go. And it doesn't have to be a personally owned vehicle, but it can be, you know, a ride share or public transportation, those kinds of areas. And then food, certainly we need food to keep us going. Our bodies are like engines. You know, you have to put gas in your car to run. We need to have quality, healthy food, not processed, if at all possible, that our bodies can have it to make us run efficiently and effectively and healthy like we want our cars to run. If we are not meeting our social needs and we're in school, we can't study, we're not getting enough sleep, so we can't pay attention in class. So that affects the outcome of our day and our learning. And if we don't have a safe environment, that affects how comfortable we feel to go outside. It affects how we work with each other or the relationships that we have that are so important as human beings to have those positive social relationships. And all of those things I describe wrap into being part of health.
Kaylee, what are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add too, you know, your income really has an impact too on like the quality of housing and where your housing is, because we've seen in areas that are lower income, where there's more pollutants, there's more low quality housing, things like that. I mean, they've even done, you know, various studies on like your zip code can determine your health. So it really plays a huge impact. So,
and I'll add one more thing in regards to your income or those in poverty. As we reviewed here at Gunderson, as we reviewed Compass, and then we actually expand our look to look at our 22 county areas. And one of the leading causes of death is cancer. Cancer, many cancers can be prevented, or if they're found early enough, they can be cured. What's happening that we're seeing with individuals who are living in poverty, they're not coming in for their wellness checks. So they're not getting their preventive care screening. So early onset is not being caught and prevention is not occurring, so that a cancer may be caught when it becomes a catastrophic kind of process then, and where more surgical intervention is necessary or more medications and such are necessary, when if a person had the means or the opportunities even to transportation to a medical facility for their preventive care, we could have prevented some of that. So we're really trying to encourage and working as hard as we can to encourage folks to come in for their preventive care. And we mentioned COVID early on and what that has had impact on our mental health. And certainly as it had impact on preventive care, folks couldn't get in to the clinic for their preventive care. Then they were afraid to come in. And now we might have gotten off track as far as some habit where we were coming in for regular appointment for our primary care clinician. And we need to get back on track and encourage folks to receive their preventive care.
That's Sarah Havens with Gunderson Health System. We're also talking to Kaylee Day from the Monroe County Health Department and Liz Evans from Great Rivers United Way. This is, of course, Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, you can send us an email anytime of any day at newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us. We're talking about the Compass Now report, the Compass Now 2021. And our guests are Liz Evans from the Great Rivers United Way, Kaylee Day from Monroe County Health Department, and Sarah Havens from Gunderson Health System. And we talked a little bit, sort of big picture about some of these things. I want to get into a couple of specific areas, because when people think about their own wellness or about their community wellness, a lot of what they think about are the things that they see. Sarah, you mentioned cancer and the prevalence of it. We also hear lots of talk about some of the things that are listed as behavioral issues in this report, like obesity and smoking and that kind of stuff. Liz, as we're looking at those issues on a specific individual level, what does this report have to say about something like obesity in our Great Rivers region?
What we're seeing around obesity is that many of the counties are trending worse in our region. So that really impacts a lot of other health factors, diabetes and heart disease, and can also impact other things that may impact overall health.
When we're looking at something like obesity across different counties, Kaylee, there's quite a disparity in population in these counties. La Crosse County is the largest with 120,000 residents, roughly. Trempealeau County has, 30,000. Buffalo County isn't in our specific listening area, but as part of this report, 13,000 people live in Buffalo County. What do you see in terms of obesity or access to health care or any of these trends? What kind of disparities do you see present between the larger counties, the smaller counties?
Yeah, I think I see as far as rates go, I would say, just looking from the report, our rates are about similar, but I think too, in rural counties, it's a lot more challenging to address because you have people in really spread out areas. So a lot of the interventions that have been used a lot of times are more targeted to like a more urban area. So it might be like looking at like walking paths or bike paths or things like that. Well, in like, if you're living out in the country, you need transportation to get places. So I think one issue that continues to come up, at least for our county, is food insecurity, and which is a challenge, of course, in an urban environment. And we do have, more, we have some cities in Monroe County, but also too, like that rural piece of like, if you can't get to the grocery store and it's, 15 miles away and it's really challenging to get there. And then you may be limited to some more like convenience stores that don't necessarily have as healthy of options and don't have fresh fruits and vegetables and things like that. So it is it is definitely challenging. And then also too, healthcare access is always an issue for rural counties because having to travel definitely is one, like having to travel, but that also means that people have to take off of work. And then also too, a lot of more rural places have harder times finding providers or filling vacancies, things like that.
Another issue, Kaylee, you raised the issue of mental health earlier, and I'm wondering You talked about the correlation having to do with COVID. Like, are we seeing people, more people with mental health problems? Or is this, as Sarah was talking about, healthcare access issue? Like, people are not able to access the normal remedies that they might have experienced before COVID?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. So at least from the research that I have been reading. So some of it is that people already had existing issues, and this has exacerbated already existing gaps in access. Also too, though, it has, you know, there has been a increase in people who are reporting, actually, I think I have it right here, but like depression and anxiety symptoms. So I was actually just recently looking at a study through the Kaiser Family Foundation, and they found that about 4 in 10 adults in the U.S. have reported symptoms of anxiety or depressive disorder, which is up from 1 in 10 prior to the pandemic. So I definitely think, you know, there is the issue of just certain things being exacerbated, but also too, I think that we are seeing an increase in people reporting those symptoms and conditions.
Sarah Havens with Gunderson, when you see a report like this, there's a lot of data in this report. I've spent a couple hours with it, and I'm just thinking of, I mean, we could do dozens of shows on the data that's in the report and not really scratch the surface. How do you take a report like this as a public health professional, and how do you use something like this to have an actual tangible impact on a community or a series of communities?
You have to make the decision to focus on something. And also, you know, as was what Kaylee alluded to, how can you access someone in the best way to make an impact on that individual or group of people? So to create what that intervention is based on that focus area that you have. And certainly with this report, those top needs, you know, they came to the surface. And fortunately, with the process that we have, it involved a random household survey. And then we also made sure that we were getting the voice of our general public, whether that be directly or indirectly through service providers. So it's important that as we pursue an intervention, that we are meeting an identified need that the individuals that we're serving have indicated to us. So the need won't be new that we're springing on someone, which is important. And for whatever that intervention is, it's important for us to personalize it, that, you know, this is what we are providing for you because X. This has been identified, and with this intervention, it should do this for you. You know, if you take the obesity concerns that we have across our entire region, we know we're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. We know we're not getting enough physical activity. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go to the gym or you have to have a trainer. It's just to move your body 30 minutes a day, you know, just move your body and then get those fresh fruits and vegetables. And it, you know, I started out, you know, feed your engine, you know, what does your car need? It's just so, and it's sometimes those small steps that people can take, and then they see some success and they're willing to take the next step. Behavior change is really, really difficult. And these behaviors that we have are directly impacting our health, whether it be not enough physical activity or not eating enough healthy foods, or it's not quitting using tobacco. You know, those are three things that are, you know, it's so important that we look at and we work with individuals so that whatever an intervention might be or a behavior change that we recommend can fit into their life. So it's not difficult. It's a simple change. It's a simple opportunity for them that hopefully some success will be seen and then willing to go to the next step.
Liz.
Sarah, some really great points. And that's one thing, the beauty of the Great Rivers Hub that, you know, Gunderson and Monroe County, as well as other organizations participate in, that United Way staff coordinates. We have folks that have high needs and little support in meeting those needs. And what the hub does is it pairs them with a community health worker that is that support person that can help them stay on track with the goals. Because sometimes when it comes to like quitting smoking, we know it's so incredibly hard. And having that person alongside you checking in is such a gift and so valuable. So that's just one of the many things that hub community health workers work on, but they work with the whole family to identify what needs there are that can help improve that family's health.
That's Liz Evans with the United Way, the Great Rivers United Way. Liz, when you're looking at the different areas, we talked earlier and Kaylee indicated that in terms of geographically, there's not a lot of disparity in the areas that this report addresses in terms of how people tend to do in La Crosse County versus in Buffalo County or something like that. Where do you see disparity? Are there differences? Does the report reveal differences in people based on income or based on race or gender, or where do those disparities exist?
So that's something that we don't go incredibly in depth in with this report, and is part of my work to continue to keep Compass in the spotlight, is to explore those disparities a little bit more deeper. We do know that there is disparities with folks that are lower income versus higher income. I've been doing some research in school, and you can see, you know, third grade reading scores for low income students are a lot lower than the higher income students. And that early start in life impacts everything later on. So we know that there's disparities, and is some additional work that will be coming in the future months.
So I'm interested in letting people know where they can get their hands on this report. There's a lot of data there. This is not necessarily like a take home, make yourself a better person in 4 easy steps report. But if, for those people who are active in the community and want to know where to advocate, where can they find the information contained here?
Sure. They can visit compassnow.org. That will have the Compass report for the region. It also has a separate report for every county represented within that regional report. It has the 2021 reports, plus it has the history, historical reports that we've been doing for the past several many years.
Since 1995, right?
Indeed.
I want to thank my guests today. I feel like we've just scratched the surface, and I've made notes on things we need to follow up on future conversations. Liz Evans is with the Great Rivers United Way. Liz, thank you very much for sharing some information with us today.
Thank you.
Sarah Havens is with Gunderson Health System. She's the director of the Office of Population Health. Sarah, thanks a lot for being here on Newsmakers.
Thank you.
Kaylee Day is with the Monroe County Health Department. Perhaps more importantly for this conversation, she's the committee chair of the Compass 2021 report. Kaylee, thanks a lot for being here today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you would like to check out the part of this conversation that you've missed or a previous episode of Newsmakers, they're all on our website, which is WPR.org/newsmakers. And as I said earlier, if you want to drop us a line, our email address is newsmakers@WPR.org. Coming up, find out just what you can do to have an impact on climate change in the world by taking simple steps here in our community. That's next on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Today on the program, we are talking about sustainability. We're talking about individual people and their impact on the environment, and some surprising ways that you might be able to have a positive impact on the environment around you and climate change and the whole works. Joining us today to talk about that are two individuals from the Sustainability Institute of La Crosse. We've got Casey Meehan, the Director of Programming at the Sustainability Institute, and Carrie Thompson, their Operations and Programming Coordinator. Casey, thank you very much for joining us today.
It's good to be here as always, Ezra.
And Carrie, thank you for coming as well.
Yeah, thanks for having us. We're really excited to talk with you today.
It's I'm looking forward to a good conversation, and we're talking about sustainability. That obviously intersects with climate change and all of those things. Is there a specific thing, Casey, that you mean when we start talking about sustainability? Is there a single definition of what that means?
There are some definitions that are sort of common out there. So lots of times people define sustainability as meeting our needs right now while not compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. But really, we like to think about sustainability more, maybe in more inspiring ways. So that definition is, in some ways, it's kind of blah, right? I mean, it's about survival. And that's not all that exciting to think about. It's not all that compelling. I mean, if I were to talk about my relationship with my wife and say, well, yeah, it's sustainable, that doesn't really sound all that exciting, right? So I want my relationship to thrive. And that's really sustainability. When it comes right down to it, it's about thriving, right? It's about building building communities that are thriving, so that are socially just, that are that are vibrant. Those are the types of words that to me really bring sustainability and make it come alive and make it exciting and compelling and just a fun vision to be a part of.
Assuming that what we're talking about is thriving and bright and forward-looking rather than survivalist, why is sustainability an important thing for people to be talking about in our public, communal conversations?
Well, I mean, sustainability, we're all part of the story. We might think that this is just something that environmentalists are interested in, but really all of us are part of this story, because all of us, everyone that I've talked to, at least, really they want to make the community a better place, and their homes better places, right? And that's what sustainability is all about. It's about bringing out those conditions so that everybody has the opportunity to thrive. So whether regardless of what your occupation is or what your status and position in life is, all of us want the same thing, and that's to have the opportunity to thrive. So that's really where sustainability comes in. It's not, yes, it's sure about stewarding the environment, right? We all want clean air and need clean water and things like that. But it's so much more than that. We also want, we want a voice in the decisions that are made that impact us. We want to be affirmed for who we are and what we look like and how we identify. We want access to jobs that are pay a living wage and that offer benefits. We want access to healthcare. These are all matters of central importance to sustainability. So it really does involve sort of every aspect of our lives.
Talk about your organization generally before we get down to the specific conversation we're having today, which is about the drawdown challenge that's coming up. What's more the role of the Sustainability Institute in our community?
So I'll take a stab at this, and then Carrie, if you want to jump in as well, please do. Really, we envision the Sustainability Institute. It's its own separate 501c3. It happens to be housed at Western Technical College, but it's its own sort of identity. And the Sustainability Institute is really about this forward-looking view of sustainability, right? So what we're hoping to do, what the mission really with the Sustainability Institute is to help people within the Driftless region think about sustainability in positive ways, and really to offer inspiration about what could be. So oftentimes, when we think about climate change and sustainability, sometimes it's couched in a real doom and gloom mentality, right? That everything's kind of heading downhill. And well, it's, there's no doubt that the situation's dire, right? And we have some real challenges that we have to live up to. There's also a lot of promise. So what we're trying to do at the Sustainability Institute is say, look, if we behave more sustainably and really work on this idea of thriving, the future is really bright. And there are some exciting things that this future might look like. And so, you know, we sort of think of it this way, like there's the doom and gloom mentality that's out there. But if we really want to have a brighter future, one that's more vibrant and people are excited about, we have to help people write that story. And we do that by offering a more positive vision about what the future might look like. Because otherwise we're hearing this doom and gloom, and it's really tough to write a positive story if you never hear anything positive about the future.
Carrie, what's your perspective on the role of the Sustainability Institute in our community?
Yeah, I really would just want to double down and echo what Casey said. A big part of our mission is celebrating sustainability. So our focus is really sharing those stories, celebrating the sustainability leaders and actions that are happening now. A lot of people often get antsy or nervous when it comes to sustainability. Like Casey said, this idea of doom and gloom, you know, what can I do? And instead of kind of being stuck in that place of fear and worry, we want to say, hey, let's celebrate what's happening around us that's successful and share those stories to hopefully inspire others to take action or find connections and ways to take action so they feel like they are a part of our community and, you know, doing those things together.
And speaking of taking that action and celebrating what's going on right now, we are talking about the drawdown challenge, which has some really interesting ways for individual people to get involved on these issues of climate change and sustainability. Casey, you want to talk about the drawdown challenge and a little bit about just sort of the big picture about what it is?
First of all, Carrie and I really thought about this idea of engaging the community and how do we do that in a way that's positive and helps people sort of move forward. And last spring, we, in conjunction with the La Crosse Earth Fair, we did something called the Green Goose Chase. And that was a community-wide scavenger hunt that was done online and people could, you know, people could go out and work in teams to find different sustainability features within the area or do certain sustainable behaviors within the area. And what we found from that is that we had really good community engagement. It blew our minds. It was way better than what we anticipated. We had pretty high expectations. And so there was a large number of teams that joined the Green Goose Chase. You know, hundreds and hundreds of social media posts about it on the Goose Chase platform. It was just this great vibe that happened. And so Carrie and I really wanted to carry that forward. So we didn't have to wait for another year to do a Green Goose Chase. And so this opportunity, we started talking about, well, what could we do possibly in the fall? And we came up with the Drawdown Challenge. So this is an online challenge. It's actually... we didn't create this or anything like that. It comes from an organization called ecochallenge.org. And they run this, have this platform that, an online platform that allows people to take some actions towards climate change. And at any rate, we started what's called this drawdown challenge here in the area. And drawdown refers to that future point in time when levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which is causing climate change, when those levels of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, when they stop climbing and start to steadily decline, that's called drawdown. And this is really the point that we can begin the process of stopping further climate change and averting potentially catastrophic warming. So that point is called drawdown. And there's all sorts of things that we can do to get to drawdown. So the drawdown challenge, what happens is participants select actions to do over a 3-week period. From October 4th through the 25th, I believe, is our challenge. And so they use the online platform to register their actions, to first of all, find some actions that they might want to take. And then they check in daily on this platform and check off their actions when they're complete. And then they get points for doing that. And the cool thing is during those 3 weeks, participants are accumulating points. But then we can also see the real-time collective impact of all of our actions and how much that's actually drawing down from the greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. Another really cool thing about this challenge is that people, just like the Green Goose Chase, are going to be able to engage with each other on the platform. So it's got a little element of social media in there, so for people to cheer each other on and maybe even have a little bit of friendly competition about how much people can do. And the actions themselves, it's a fairly wide range of actions. So we tend to think that, to draw down carbon out of the atmosphere, it's got to be things like saving energy, right? Turning off your lights, turning off your computer at the end of the day. Well, that's true, but there's also a lot of other actions that we can do that from Project Drawdown are sort of scientifically vetted to be solutions that exist now.
I was really surprised at some of the things that are listed. I mean, I obviously, like, drive less, don't put so much gas in your car, sure, whatever. That's obvious. But a lot of these things, you look at them and go, tell me how this connects to climate change. What are some of these activities that people can be involved in that they might be more surprised by?
The one that probably surprises most people is education. We can kind of think of three big buckets of what helps with climate change and what we need to do. One of those buckets is mitigation. So keeping the carbon out of the atmosphere in the first place. And those are the ones that are like sort of least surprising, right? Driving less and saving energy and going solar and stuff like that. Then there's another bucket of solutions that involves helping the earth take in carbon, because that's another solution with climate change, right? And so it's stewarding the land, it's planting trees, it's making sure that we've got healthy soil, right? Because that sequesters carbon. And then there's this third group that really sort of blows people's minds, and that's just sort of improving society. One of them is making sure that girls and women have access around the world have access to education and access to healthcare and family planning should they want it. So that's a really big climate solution that we don't often think of. So by supporting those types of causes, you're also helping climate change. And another big one that people don't always think of is the waste that we produce, in particular food waste. So throwing out a bunch of food, typically what happens is that food goes to the landfill. And when food goes to the landfill, it releases methane as it breaks down. And methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So in America, we typically, about 40% of our food doesn't actually make it to the plate or ends up in the landfill, I should say. And so that represents a really large amount of greenhouse gases going up in the atmosphere. So if we can do something about our food waste, that again is a great climate solution. And if we compost it, we're also creating soil, right? Which is healthy for the environment.
It's interesting to think about how much food, and you started by saying food that doesn't make it to our plate, but in a lot of cases, it absolutely makes it to our plate, and then we don't eat it and we throw it out. So maybe get a smaller plate, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's some really simple solutions that we can do. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Get a smaller plate, which automatically makes you take smaller portion sizes, right? That type of thing can happen in restaurants as well. Restaurants can decide to switch to smaller plates or give smaller portions. We can really be mindful about the expiration dates on foods, because those expiration dates typically aren't really scientifically sound at all. So even though the expiration date might have, a particular date on it, that doesn't always mean that the food is bad at that point. In fact, oftentimes that expiration date says best if used by. It doesn't mean that the food's gone bad at that point.
Carrie, I'm interested in some of these details. If people are wanting to participate or wanting to learn how they can get a team together, where can people find out about the Drawdown Challenge?
Sure. So we are encouraging everyone to join our team, the Sustainability Institute Drawdown Challenge team. So we'll be all competing on one team together. And internally within that team, we'll have a leaderboard for that little bit of competitiveness. But if people want to find more information or join our team, the best thing to do is to head to our website, which is sustaininstitute.com. And right on our homepage, we have a button that takes you to the Drawdown Challenge page. And from there, you're going to find all kinds of information about the challenge, how to join our team, what that collective impact is going to look like as we complete our actions, and more information as well. We also have some great videos that you can watch that take you step by step through that process in case you need more information.
So there's one team the individual statistics, if you will be available there as well. But there's one team. Are we as a locality competing against other teams around the country?
So there are teams all over the world,
oh, wow,
which is amazing to see. Yeah. So what's great about this platform is it's going to do all of that formulation for us. So as soon as you complete your action, you're going to be able and filter to see your individual impacts or the impact of our Sustainability Institute team or everyone participating in the challenge across the world, which is really amazing to see how all of those actions combined together can really create a large impact.
And so the website where that information is again is what?
So to get more information about joining our team is sustaininstitute.com. And then that will take you, once you head there and head to our page, which is the Drawdown Challenge, that's going to take you to ecochallenge.org to go ahead and get signed up.
Now, this in and of itself has been an interesting conversation, but this isn't the only effort that you're involved in. Coming up later in October are the Sustainability Awards, and I know we likely won't have another opportunity to talk to you before then, so can you give us a bit of a preview?
Of course. So the great thing about the Drawdown Challenge and the Sustainability Institute, like we said, is we like to celebrate. So in addition to the Inspiring Sustainability Awards happening on October 28th at 6:30, it's a virtual ceremony event, so make sure to register for that. Part of that, we will be having the Drawdown Challenge impact presented. So we, during that presentation, will talk more about our team impacts. But during the awards, we're going to be announcing live our two winners for 2021. We had 9 amazing nominees this year, and we're excited to see who our winners will be. In addition to announcing our winners and recapping the results of the Drawdown Challenge, we're also going to have a guest speaker, which is Erin Sikorsky, who is the director for climate and security. She's also a local Holman grad, so she'll be speaking a little bit as well at that event. So we hope all of you join us, because the more the merrier when it comes to celebration.
And same website for information on that?
Correct. Head to sustaininstitute.com, and right on the top there, you're going to see upcoming events, and you'll be able to register for free. And again, it's a virtual ceremony event at 6:30 on October 28th.
Casey, you've mentioned several times about the sort of changing the paradigm about how we look at sustainability into one that's positive and forward-looking. And so as we wrap up our conversation, I want to give you an opportunity to do just that. A lot of people think about sustainability in terms of, I got to put solar panels on my house, I got to drive an electric car, I got to become a vegan, I got to, you know, what fill in the blank thing that's hard to do and that is cost prohibitive or discipline prohibitive for a lot of people. But a lot of your message is that there's something that everybody can do towards sustainability. So what are some of these small steps? Maybe a couple of things that you think pretty much everybody could do if they just decide to do it.
I think it is Americans. There are, you know, really there's 2 or 3 things that we can all do that probably have the biggest bang for the buck, just given our sort of position in the world. The first one would be think about your diet and reducing the amount of red meat in it. Now, listen, I'm a born and raised Wisconsin guy. I know that, you know, telling people to go vegetarian is not going to happen. But even just reducing your meat consumption, you know, taking one day a week and not eating meat, that's got a big climate impact. As we talked about earlier, the food waste is another big issue. So just being much more mindful about what's happening to our food that is on our plate that we don't eat and what we can do about that. So even starting a little compost pile or, you know, in Isle La Plume here in La Crosse, you can bring your food scraps and they turn it into compost and it's all free. So considering that, and then also consider how you might be able to, how to move yourself around without using a car. Doesn't mean giving up your car. It just means, you know, if you have multiple trips to make, multiple errands to run, try chaining them together. Or maybe there's an errand that you can run by using your bike because it's, you know, less than a mile or two away, or even walking. There's lots of things that we can do. Again, these sort of small things, not saying that that's going to solve the world, right? But these little things matter, because when we do these little things, what we found is, is you're much more likely to do bigger things later on. So these small steps that you can take now actually sort of feed your soul and get you more interested and willing to do these bigger actions later on.
Casey Meehan is Director of Programming for the Sustainability Institute of La Crosse. Casey, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I've had a great time.
And Carrie Thompson is the Operations and Programming Coordinator for the Sustainability Institute. Carrie, thanks for being on Newsmakers.
Thanks for having me, and we hope all of you will join us in the Drawdown Challenge.
Indeed so. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. You can catch our show every Friday morning at 10 o'clock on the Ideas Network 90.3 and on Friday evenings at 7 o'clock on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, we're always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. For Dawn Jewell, my producer, I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again next week for another Newsmakers, only right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.